Hey everyone, I'm Margie, mooring up there, rule here, whatever you want, whatever goes. I've been working in the Dampier now for 2 years, so I'm going to talk about a few of the bits and pieces that I have collected in my fieldwork. First of all, you've probably seen the Dampier about 1,000 times this morning already, but it's about 1,600 kilometres north of here, it's smack bang in the middle of the Pilbara. There's a lot of mining, there's a lot of fishing, there's a lot of human impacts, and it continues to increase. The work that I'm a part of is part of a Woodside-funded project that is an offset to the big mine that they've built up on the bar up there, and it's to look at research and monitoring in the marine environment up in Dampier. So the first aspect of that was to collect all the data sets. Actually, Damo touched on it a little bit, that there's, you know, a massive amount of data up there, and it's got to be put all together and turned into something. So we've started doing that. I came in at the end of this project and helped to write up the report, but these are all the data sets that we found in the Dampier relating to coral. So as you can see, it's pretty broad. A lot of it is mining-based consultant work, but there's also was some earlier research done as well. From that, we could get coral cover. That's probably the only consistent measure that everyone collected. You can see, if I can get the little light, it dates back right back to 1980s when Seminook was up there. We had Chris Simpson, he's from Parks and Wildlife, but he did his PhD up there and collected stuff back in 85. We had the museum trip in the late 90s. They collected a lot of coral data while they were up there. And then most recently, as the mine started to develop, we got really massive numbers of studies working on coral for Rio and Woodside and that sort of thing. Looking at this, you can't really draw a lot on what the coral is actually doing because it's so spatially confounded. But when you look at the site level, a lot of these sites have been monitored for a long period of time. You know, the last couple of decades, so we can start to look at some of the trends. There's a couple there that are just fairly noisy, but a couple of interesting ones. We've got Hammersley Shoals here, it's got fairly considerable decline. Angel Island is also declining, and La Jondre. Interestingly, Hammersley Shoals and La Jondre are the two sort of more exposed ones. They're the ones where Damien lost his sediment tiles. So, you know, perhaps there's some kind of exposure factor running in there, cyclones, that sort of thing. It's worth noting too that all of this data is, you know, I need to talk to the owners of the data and talk about what we can do to get some of these patterns out there for people to see. This one's a really interesting one, and it's just quite shocking to look at the pictures. I had a report that DC did, we did, 2007, and I thought, oh, they're great coral communities, aren't they? That'll be a great coral monitoring site. So I raced out there in 2014 to suss out where I was going to put my transects, and I found only macroalgae, and that's it. I went to the exact coordinates, so I'm actually going up there in 2 weeks to do macroalgae monitoring. So it's listed as one of my macroalgae sites. So in, you know, two birds with one stone, I'll be able to have my new data point for that site for coral as well, which is not looking great. So yes, what am I doing? I'm setting up a monitoring program for all the assets, as Tom mentioned, in that area. It's in conjunction with the proposed marine park. We've been waiting for that for a good decade now, still waiting, but I have to design a program with the assumption that maybe one day there'll be a park there. So, you know, I've picked out 15 sites. We've got a few in the proposed sanctuary zones and a few outside of them. Yes, and I went up and did my first sampling in 2015 and collected some data. So we found that there's quite a good rich diversity up there. 37 genera. The environment can be quite turbid and harsh and warm as well, as we've seen. So you get your common ones like your turbid areas and your parietes and things, but we're also seeing more unusual species like Mosellaria and Diploastria, which are live in the more turbid environment. So we get a good diversity. So when we look back at the through time, putting my data in now as well, we can see that there has been some shifts, and probably of most interest is some of those more exposed locations which have started to shift towards turfs. You've got sailfish is another quite exposed location, sort of heading towards a sort of more sponge environment, and Hammersley Shoals is another one I've lost in, always right at the top, which has sort of shifted as well towards the sponge environment. But interestingly too, the blue ones being the older samples in 2007, they've kind of clustered together in a more sort of similar environment with time. So, and to continue the picture of what's happening now, we've started to collect a whole bunch of other parameters external to the coral cover to sort of try and explain what we're seeing out there, why is it different at different sites, and what some of the patterns might be attributed to. I was lucky enough to go on one of Damien's trips and collect a whole bunch of samples while I was there. So obviously we've got coral cover, the recruitment data that Damo presented earlier. I also collected sediment, and we used water samples to get like a total suspended solids. It's not a great measure because it's just a once-off picture, and as we know, that can change day by day. Sediment characteristics, lots of sieving and cooking samples, and then also the depth of the sites and exposure, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a minute. So running all these things through a best subsets model to see which of those parameters probably explain the coral cover the best. And what we found is two quite strong predictors being exposure and sorting. So a little schematic to kind of explain it, because I keep getting it modelled in my head. Basically, as sorting increases, so does coral cover. And, oh, sorry, as it becomes more poorly sorted, coral cover increases. So you've got lots of different sizes of sediment particles. So a much less homogeneous environment is correlated to good coral cover. And what that's generally quite well reported in the literature. It's something quite common that people found. And what you would generally say is as you get more complex corals, they break up into different sized pieces, really. So if you've got lots of different species, lots of cover, you're going to get lots of different particle sizes. But we've also got a link with exposure. So at those more exposed sites, as we see, there was less coral cover. And that's what we found as well in the results. And there's a third link there with the sorting. So as, what have I got here? As exposure leads to those more poorly sorted environments, it smashes up those corals and makes lots of different sized pieces. All right. So I've also just plugged Damien's recruitment data in briefly. This is just sort of a quick look. And we've got quite a strong link there with coral cover recruitment. It's sort of the same sort of stuff Damien talked about. I don't really need to go over it too much. And you can see in the plots there that as you get more coral, you get more recruitment. As I said, this sort of comes through as a bit of a story, hopefully. It's sort of showing that there are some declines. This photo here was from Delambre Island, which is way out to the east. You go there and you can see that there was beautiful Acropora, Favids, Parietes, and I've never been there before this last trip in 2015, but what we saw was 0% coral cover, just everything smashed and gone. And talking to one of the guys we worked with, he actually thought it might have been as a result of the cyclone, because it's only happened in the last couple of years. What's happening, and we want to try and build up enough of a data set of these parameters and predictors through time to work out why it's changing, what changes we're seeing, and to continue monitoring it, to continue understanding how the parameters are changing with time, so that we can see if there's a change of what it actually is as a result of. As we said, exposure and sorting are the two that popped out for us, so we're going to keep an eye on those two. So where to from here? I'm hoping to turn this stuff into a manuscript, but if anyone else has any ideas of things that might be driving some of the patterns that I've found, that would be great. Any suggestions of how to turn in things? There's a good continuous story there, maybe a couple of papers, other things we can collect, continue to add coral data and recruitment data together and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, Marty, interested, could you take a sediment core from a location and have a look at the grain size over time, like presumably there's a stratification, and compare that to existing coral cover data to see whether there's a match?
So you mean look at the accumulation bands? It's something really interesting. I mean, we just sort of scooped off what we could get in one core, but to actually try and preserve a proper core would be a really interesting and cool way to move forward, I think, because we have the coral cover data. That's definitely not a problem, but it'd be nice to pick out a handful of sites and see if we could get a picture of how things have changed there.
Yeah, and how quickly it would be deposited. I mean, maybe go back a bit further than the coral cover data exists, but maybe that could be extracted using a similar sort of core.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. cool question to answer.
Ross?
Well, it's a question for you or maybe someone else in the audience that might know, but is there would have had to be a kind of extended period without severe wave impacts prior to 2007, for example. What is the history of cyclones in that particular part of the Pilbara say? Does it kind of look like that?
There's been cyclones on and off. I definitely want to sit down and have a look at that time and pick out those exact periods that they happened, but there were some significant ones back in the 80s and the 60s as well, so there should be links. It can't just be a result of one cyclone or something like that. It's a pattern through time. Picking those peaks out and having a look at where they fit would be the next logical step. Thanks.